From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. Coming up, we talk to Ruby Rayner, the River Reporter. Got some serious news from the community to get to, including an update on Camp FEMFO. That's still to come. But first, yesterday on the local edition was the Kingfisher Project, Information Against Addiction, with Bill Williams. If you missed it, yesterday's episode of the Kingfisher Project, of the local edition, is up on the local edition podcast. But on the Kingfisher podcast, you can hear the full hour-long interview that Bill did with his guest. But because we were doing the Kingfisher Project, we couldn't give you an update on the story that we've been tracking for weeks, if not months, which was New York State's budget, which was due by April 1st. But as you may have heard, it didn't get passed before April 1st. So the New York State budget is officially late again. Now, WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Jesse King is speaking with lawmakers in the Hudson Valley about their top concerns as negotiations continue.
Legislators passed a $1.7 billion budget extender Tuesday that will fund the government through Thursday. But multiple lawmakers who spoke to WAMC say they're not going to meet that deadline either, and another extender will be needed. State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat from the 42nd District, estimates it will be a week or more before there's a final version of the budget.
We are making progress. I think we would all agree it's a little bit slower than we'd all like it to be, but we're making progress.
Governor Kathy Hochul proposed a $252 billion budget back in January. Lawmakers say there are a number of factors holding up negotiations, including concerns over spending and disagreements over multiple policy items in the budget. The issues causing the most stir are proposed changes to New York's discovery reform laws, a cell phone ban in schools, and the criteria used by the state to decide whether someone with mental illness should be involuntarily committed. With that, the state easily blew past the April 1st deadline. State Senator Rob Rollison, a Republican from the 39th District, says he doesn't feel like he has a lot of power in these discussions as a member of the minority conference, but he hopes changes to New York's pretrial discovery laws make it through. He says cases are being dismissed because district attorneys statewide are struggling to meet the tighter deadlines established in 2019 to submit evidence for discovery, including evidence not directly tied to the case.
Essentially, what the governor has proposed is that something that is inconsequential, something that was not deliberately held back. There's so much material. There needs to be some leeway.
Rollison and Skoufis both say they're keeping an eye on funding for the Metropolitan Transportation Authority. The MTA is looking to the state to plug all or part of a more than $33 billion funding gap for its next capital plan, potentially by increasing the payroll mobility tax on nearby businesses. Skoufis says such an increase would not be fair for Hudson Valley businesses, especially those west of the Hudson, which do not have direct train access to New York City.
Those of us who don't have access to the MTA should not have to pay even more beyond what we're already being robbed from for service that doesn't exist in our communities.
Skoufis says he's working on getting two tolling discounts for Orange County drivers in the Senate's budget plan, one for the Governor Mario Cuomo Bridge and one for the Thruway Toll Plaza at Harriman. Democratic State Senator Michelle Hinchey, meanwhile, says she's focused on funding for universal school meals in the budget, especially as the federal government looks to cut farm-to-school grants nationwide. Hinchey from the 41st District says she wants to expand state funding for the farm-to-school and Nourish New York programs to help schools and food banks get access to fresh produce from local farms.
It's one we've been fighting for actually for the last couple of years. But I think, you know, I feel really good about this year. I'm hopeful that we can get that across the finish line, which would allow more schools to opt into the farm to school program and actually get good local food to all of our students.
Hinchey says she's also trying to get a pilot of her Safe Water Action Infrastructure Program, or SWAP, into the bill. She says SWAP would allow municipalities to receive funding for waterline maintenance, similar to how they receive CHIPS funding for roads and highways. On that note, Assemblyman Matt Slater says he wants to see more money for CHIPS and other infrastructure projects in the budget. The Republican says the Hudson Valley, and especially his 94th district, struggles with, quote, the worst-rated roads and bridges in the entire state of New York, end quote. At the same time, he's concerned about the overall size of the budget, the legislature's versions were even higher than Hochul's, and how long it's taking to get done.
When you continue to see us blow through the fiscal year deadlines. Now, this is my third year here and the third year in a row we've done this. And, you know, when I was a town supervisor, we had a date that we were mandated to have our local budgets in. We didn't get the opportunity to do extenders. So under one-party rule, it really makes no sense that folks can't get on the same page.
Also in question is how much money New York will actually end up receiving from the federal government when it finalizes its budget later this year. The Trump administration is working to slash federal spending nationwide. Iskufa says lawmakers have no idea how deep the cuts might be.
It may wind up that we have to do a budget 2.0 several months from now and come back to Albany and revisit the budget that we're putting together. But for the meantime, we can only deal with the current circumstances.
Reporting for WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Jesse King.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for that report. And now let's get into more local news, and this time from the River Reporter, stories that are up at riverreporter.com. And for that, I spoke to Ruby Rayner earlier this afternoon. Well, Ruby, welcome back to the local edition.
It's good to be back. Thank you.
We do have a couple of actual sad stories to get to start off. First up, like a passing among the recent legislatures of Sullivan County, correct?
Yes. Michael Brooks, who is the former District 3 representative for the Sullivan County Legislature, passed away at the age of 66.
You know, just to let the listener know, especially during the pandemic, when the county started doing regular updates and video kind of call updates that to keep the public informed of what was going on, Michael Brooks, that's where I got to know him. That's when I started seeing him a lot, because he wasn't my legislator for my district, but that's where I started to see him. So what's the reaction to his passing? What are you hearing?
Yeah, well, Legislature Chair Nadia Reich commented to the River Reporter saying, you know, despite the fact that Brooks, who was a Republican representative, and Nadia is a Democrat, that despite them being on opposite sides of the aisle, that he was, to her, a gentle soul, and really praised just his kindness and respectfulness as a legislator and a fellow legislator that she served with. And his wife, in a post to Facebook about his passing, Donna Brooks, you know, stated that he was just very deeply committed to the to community service and his own community, and just improving the lives of others. And he definitely has served in, you know, a multitude of community positions in the county. You know, most recently he was a Sullivan County legislator, as we mentioned, from 2020 to 2023, but he previously also served on the Neversink Town Board, as well as the Tri-Valley Central School District Board. And the one thing that I had covered most, you know, at the tail end of his last term, was his efforts to bring and expand broadband service to the county. He served as the chair of the broadband LDC, and those efforts have still continued, but he was really the person who pushed for that project and pushed it forward.
Mm-hmm. And there will be a memorial service, and that's happening on Thursday. That's tomorrow, going from 4 to 6 at Colonial Memorial Funeral Home, where friends and family will gather to honor and remember Michael's extraordinary life. And his wife, Donna, is also saying, in lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Sundown Methodist Church. That's the Sundown Methodist Church. Well, thank you for bringing us that news. And now we have other kind of unfortunate news here. There was a man who was missing in Roscoe, and unfortunately they found his remains recently.
Yeah. So according to the New York State Police, they discovered severely decomposed human remains found near a stream off of County Route 92 on March 17th in Roscoe, New York. And using fingerprint identification, they were able to identify the remains as Moses Baptiste, 43 years old, of Roscoe, New York, who had been reported missing to authorities in September of 2024. People might remember seeing seeing articles about that, the New York State Police at the time had put out a call for help in finding him. And it was actually Bappi's sister, Lucy, spoke with a River Reporter, and she said that the dog was actually found because there was this search that went on 2 weeks ago for two missing teens who were found alive and safe in the area, in the same area, and that's when the body was discovered.
Oh my goodness. So they found him when they were looking for other people?
Yes.
Wow. I did not know about that. So is this still under investigation? Do they know what actually happened?
So it's still under investigation. The New York State Police told the River Reporter that the death appeared to be a suicide. And according to Baptiste Sterling, who also spoke to the River Reporter, she said that she was told by authorities that the cause of death and the associated weapon were still under investigation. Authorities had informed Lucy that a gunshot to the head was identified on the body. And additionally, the county coroner had told her that he listed the cause of death as undetermined. And so she said she's not ruling out suicide or other possibilities. And that she said, you know, whatever caused Moses's death is really just devastating to her. And so that's like the main kind of what's currently going on with the investigation in terms of what led to Moses's death.
What's the community response to this news?
Yeah, so he was described in a couple of different posts about him as the quote, and seems to be, based on all of the responses and everything, a very beloved member of the Roscoe community. The River Reporter spoke with his former landlord of 10 years, Eddie Doran, who called him a quote, sweetheart. You know, he mentioned his very tall stature at 6'3", and said, you know, you might, if you know him, be nervous because of how tall he was, but that he was just, you know, a teddy bear is what Eddie described him as. And another local, Kayla Zeminik, who said that when she and her family had moved in over a decade ago, that Moses came over and, you know, introduced himself to her family, and that she remembers him as a kind and very soft-spoken person. And his sister is organizing a funeral in Roscoe to honor his connection to the town, and has also started a GoFundMe for funeral expenses, which is linked in the article online if folks are interested. But there was also more information that his sister kind of talked about his history and, you know, some of the mental health challenges that her brother was struggling with. And she really pointed to some places where she feels like the mental health system in Sullivan County really failed her brother. She talked to me about how her brother had been diagnosed with schizophrenia, and she had found out that he had missed three of his mental health appointments prior to being reported missing. And when she went to his house, she found a letter from Sullivan County's mobile mental health clinic that was dated September 16th, 2024, and showed he had reached out for help and that they had stopped by and that he wasn't there. And under the letter, you know, notifying that they had stopped by was a handwritten note that told Moses to reschedule his appointments with the doctors, indicating that the mobile mental health clinic was also aware of the missed appointments. And Lucy said, you know, she always will think of her brother as a kid, and that's how she referred to him. And she said that this really indicated to her that he had reached out for help, and that, you know, he was really failed by this, you know, these mental health services for missing kind of the beat on that. And, you know, she said, quote, you know, the kid reached out. And so that was something that she pointed out and wanted to be shared.
Okay, well, thank you for that report. And I was seeing this reaction online as well, and I saw the link to the GoFundMe and saw the concern of the community there. So sad news, but thank you for giving us all those details about folks' reaction and what his sister's saying. A month or so ago, we had a report about Detective Jack Harb. And basically, you want to give people a quick recap about this story involving Sullivan County sheriffs, and then what's the update on Jack Harb's status?
Sure. So Detective Jack Harb of the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office was quoted pretty heavily in a article posted on the River Reporter titled Misconduct Alleged in the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office. In that article, Harb is quoted accusing the sheriff's office of a hostile work environment. And then following that, Harb was placed on unpaid leave for 30 days from the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, pending based on charges from a hearing that had happened a couple of months prior to that. And now, currently, at the end of those 30 days of unpaid leave, the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office notified him that he has now been put on paid leave pending an internal investigation with the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office. So that's the update, is that after he completed those 30 days of unpaid leave because of a conduct hearing decision, he has now been placed on paid leave and so is still not at work. And the sheriff's office had originally, when he was first placed on the paid 30-day leave under Sheriff Chibodi, had noted that his paid leave was in retaliation, which was something that Harb had sought, and stated that the timing had no relation to any comments that Harb had made. And the sheriff's office currently, about this current internal investigation in association with the leave that Harb is currently on, said that they are not giving any details about why there is a investigation into Detective Harb.
We're having a little bit of trouble with the audio quality here, so I just want to reiterate those two points that you just made there. Basically, that Harb is saying that this suspension is a continuing retaliation from Sullivan County Sheriff's Office for speaking out about the Sheriff's Office, and Under Sheriff Eric Chibodi has previously denied this unpaid leave was retaliation and stated that the timing of the unpaid suspension was unrelated to the article. So what else do we need to know about the story? You say there's a similar case to this as well?
Yeah, so actually one of the other employees of the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office, who was quoted in that article, Lieutenant Paul Slavik, who's now retired, had previously also been placed on paid leave before he retired. He was on paid leave pending an internal investigation for 8 months. And no charges or findings were ever disclosed to him based on that internal investigation. And he retired in good standing. So that was a similar situation of there being no further information about what the internal investigation was and the situation of being placed on paid leave.
Okay, and in the meantime, so basically this is a detective who's still receiving pay but is not working while under investigation. Who's doing the detecting out there now?
Yes, so, Detective Harb had said he had 40 open cases when he was first placed on unpaid leave and now still not in the office because of being placed on paid leave pending this investigation. You know, there's still those cases and more cases coming in. And just actually 2 weeks ago, the Sullivan County Legislature approved an additional position, detective position, to be assigned in the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office which was not previously budgeted for. So that then those funds were appropriated $8,000, a little over that. So that's where the work will fall with Detective Harb currently out right now on paid leave.
Okay, again, with some audio quality issues here, did you say, is that 8,000 or 18,000?
18,000.
Okay. Okay. Well, Ruby, thank you for that update. You've got some more news to get to, including an update on Camp FIMFO. You mind if we take a break here and then come back and talk with you some more?
Sounds good.
Okay, we're going to do that, and we'll be back with more news from Ruby Rayner and the River Reporter right after this. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Hey, can we talk? It's Radio Catskill's Spring Fun Drive, and we're looking for listener support from friends like you. Yeah, you! Not sure how to donate? Head on over to WJFFradio.org. WJFFradio.org for the WJFF Radio Catskills Spring Fun Drive. Yeah, you got it. It's not that hard at all. Thanks.
Yes, please do give what you can at WJFFradio.org or call us now, 845-482-4141. That's how you donate over the phone. Call 845-482-4141. I'm Jason Dole. It's a local edition. Let's get back to my conversation I had earlier today with Ruby Rayner of the River Reporter, getting all the latest news. You've got an update on Camp FIMFO, and I know we've been waiting on this environmental review, essentially. What's the latest? What's the update? Where are we with this environmental review?
So the update is not very exciting in terms of any, you know, big decisions or anything large happening within this huge project review that's been going on now for a little bit over 3 years. But the update is that the public comment period for Camp FIMFO project's environmental review has now officially closed. And so that means that the ball, for right now at least, is in the court of Camp FIMFO. So they now are going to take all of the public comments that were made that were emailed, that were made during the 2-hour in-person public comment hearing, as well as the questions and comments that were submitted by the Highland Planning Board themselves, in addition to the other oversight agencies, which are the Upper Delaware Council, which, you know, have cooperative ownership with the National Park Service, who also submitted comments to give oversight over any projects in the Delaware River corridor, which Camp FIMFO falls into. So they're going to, now Camp FIMFO, their job is to take all of these comments, all of these questions from all of these different bodies, the public, Upper Delaware Council, National Park Service, and the Highland Planning Board, and to create and make revisions and answer the questions to the draft environmental impact statement that they had already written, and that is online on the Highland Towns website. And then they will resubmit it after it's been revised. So it will be a revised draft environmental impact statement to the Highland Planning Board. And there is no required time frame for them. So, and it was said to the Highland Planning Board that they don't have an idea at this, as of last week, of when they're going to be submitting that. So that's the update right now, is they're kind of working on putting together their second draft, and there isn't a known time frame of when that will be submitted to the Planning Board right now.
But they are definitely going to resubmit, right? There's no chance that they're going to be like, you know what, we're not even going to bother. I mean, they're moving forward with this project, and this is part of the steps that they've got to do to pursue it, correct?
Yes, this is the next step, and everything, they've taken every next step, so that would indicate that they are keen to move forward with the project, yes. But just in terms of, you know, giving people a sense of when something might happen next, the planning board doesn't necessarily know. So I can't say that, you know, in next month's planning board or the next month's planning board that there'll be, you know, an update. It's a little bit, you know, up to them and how fast they're going to submit this revised draft environmental impact statement.
All right. And then, again, you mentioned here that if they don't need revisions, the board's got 45 days to finalize the, it will no longer be a draft. It'll just be environmental impact statement for public then to access it.
Yeah. So it's possible, right, that they receive this revised draft environmental impact statement, the planning board, and they say, actually, you didn't fully answer the question that we proposed here, or we need some information on this topic that we previously asked about, and give it actually back to Camp Info for another round of revisions. But they can only do that on the questions that they've already previously outlined. So there's no new points that are being brought up. And if they don't do that, then it's up to the planning board. As you said, they have 45 days, and then they will finalize the environmental impact statement. It will no longer be a draft, and then it will be publicly accessible on the website for everybody to see.
Okay, we got a couple of short stories to update what's happening in Northeast Pennsylvania in our listening area. Let's start off with Honesdale, actually. What's the update for the Honesdale Borough Council? What are they up to?
Yes, so the Honesdale Borough Council has a new appointee. One of the former Borough Council members moved out of the area, and so that left a vacant seat. And so the new Honesdale Borough Council appointee was James Cordero, and he was sworn in immediately at that meeting last week by the mayor, Derek Williams, and the vote breakdown was there was three councilors in favor, James Brennan, William McAllister, and Jason Newborn, with two against the appointment of Cordero. Tiffany Rogers and James Hamill. James Hamill actually expressed some concerns about appointing Cordero to the borough council. He said that at the meeting, he said that he's, you know, seen Cordero be divisive on social media, and he has concerns about that divisiveness being introduced to the borough council. But despite Hamill's different concerns, he was appointed, and so he is now the borough council's newest member.
Okay, great. And now in Lackawaxen, I guess people like their parks and rec there?
Yeah, public recreation was a huge focus in this month's Lackawaxen Township meeting. They established a new parks and rec board. So it's a 7-member board. It was created to oversee recreation and events in the township. And it's in collaboration with a nonprofit Growing Lackawaxen. And so they're planning improvements to Veterans Memorial Park, which include a new playground and planting new shade trees. And they also discussed plans for a pickleball court and a renovation of the baseball field. So we'll see if this new board, you know, kind of improves some of these aspects of Veterans Memorial Park and brings and reinvigorates parks and recreation in Lackawaxen.
All right. Well, Ruby, look at that. We got through, I can't even count now. That was like 6 stories, I think. So that's a lot of news that you brought to us tonight.
And there's more on theriverreporter.com.
Absolutely. These stories are all up now at riverreporter.com. We're talking to the River Reporter's own Ruby Rayner, who's usually here with us on a Wednesday evening, only on the local edition. Ruby, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Well, that's it for the local edition tonight. Thank you so much for being here with me. We'll be back again in just half an hour for our special live edition of the Retro Cocktail Hour. You don't want to miss that. So do stay with us. But there's more news to come up next. Right here on Radio Catskill, it's The Daily.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill,